Welcome to Performance Talk with your host, Yul Gordon and Chris Costa, where professionals discuss the latest news and developments in the profession and all areas that affect sports performance, strength and conditioning, nutrition, recovery, and much more. Listen now to your host and this week's guest, next on Performance Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Performance Talk. My co-host is Chris Costa, as always, and he is living large in Pennsylvania. Talk to us, Chris. How you doing, man?
I mean, why am I living large? I'm just...
Because you always live in large, man, because you're the big player from the Himalaya.
I'm not a player. I'm not from the Himalayas. So I wouldn't mind hiking the Himalayas. I'm just too afraid of heights to do so.
Are you afraid of heights, really?
Terribly. Well, terribly. Right. I would never jump from a plane unless I absolutely had to.
Okay. All right. Well, our guest today is Anna Turner, nutritionist.
Hello.
Dietitian. Mm-hmm. How are you doing, Anna?
I'm good. I would also not jump from a plane ever.
Come on, guys.
Unless I had to.
Y'all got
to
get on and get with it. I said the same thing. I wouldn't jump from a plane and did it anyway. But
we can't be all Yul Gordon.
No, I bounced when I hit the ground. I busted up a lot of stuff.
Did you actually?
Yeah, literally. Anna, don't mind us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I'm a sports dietitian. So dietitian number one, and then credentialed in working with athletes specifically. Kind of the evolution of my career, what I started in full-time athletics. So working for universities like the University of Illinois, University of Notre Dame. And then I started to move. I got hired on at a performance facility in Indianapolis, St. Vincent Sports Performance. And then I started to do more contracting. So they would contract with different teams. Like we contracted with the Indianapolis Colts and the Pacers and smaller schools like Ball State University, Butler University. And I don't necessarily mean smaller schools. I just mean schools that don't yet have full-time sports dietitians. That got me some contracting experience. And then my husband and I decided we wanted to move back to where we're from, which is in the middle of central Illinois. Not really close to anything whatsoever. My new venture is more virtual sports nutrition programs and trying to meet the needs of those small colleges that, again, don't have access to a sports dietitian or have one yet full time.
You've worked in the sports organizational level, and now you're moving to the private sector. Tell us, what's been some of your challenges with that? That seems like I never worked directly. I've always contracted.
Sure.
I've never been part of a school system or anything.
Yeah, well, I had a huge transition, I will definitely admit to. When we moved from Notre Dame down to Indianapolis, I was very excited for the job. Like the job was very cool. It was a very awesome performance facility. Tons of Olympians went through that facility. And they also obviously had very high level contracts like the Colts and the Pacers and then Butler University and Ball State University. But to me, the hardest going from being on the team and in the organization to being an outsider and not, you know, being with your athletes all day, every day, not having the all day, every day time to connect with your coworkers, just kind of, you know, you learn so much just by being there. You know, the stuff you pick up that maybe isn't in a medical report or in updated team mits. So I think that that was the biggest thing for me, was trying to figure out how do I connect with these teams and the way that I want to, like I'm used to at the full-time level without being full-time.
I think before we get into some nutrition-specific things, this is the professional macerations and things you go through when you have life to deal with as well as your profession. As you and your husband now are back in central Illinois and you're reaching out more virtually, how has that changed your approach or has it changed your approach at all?
I would say that I learned how to capitalize on technology to continue building the relationship I want to build with my teams. So as far as working with the teams, I would say no, I'm really excited and confident in what I do because of the technology that I'm using. I'm actually able to communicate with my athletes more than when I was in person. As far as like building relationships with administration and the school, that definitely takes longer, right? Because I was on the team on the roster, so to speak, at the previous schools where I was on staff. And now I'm selling my services to them on a yearly basis, you know, hoping to get another contract. So that part is definitely different, where you kind of feel at arm's length because you're selling them a service. I'm just proud of what I've been able to do with using the nutrition app that I use, because I can communicate with my student athletes more than I could have when I had, you know, 400 athletes to myself at Notre Dame and no technology to capitalize on.
Okay, technology has definitely been a positive for you with the athletes. But, you know, I don't know if it's technology that is the real issue with, you know, being part of the start or getting to meld together with the staff as much as it is just not being there. What do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely with the staff. Like, you know, if I have to think of one of the schools I work with is Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Yeah. And I know the strength coach there really well because he's my main report to. We talk on a weekly basis and I visit in person on a monthly basis. But as far as, you know, my athletic, if I'm a sports dietitian and that's my school, I would know all of the athletic trainers way better than I do. I would know the team physicians. I would know the sports psychologists, right? And so year one was definitely building the relationship with my direct report too and implementing the program. And in year two, one of my goals is definitely the athletic training area and looking at like their nutrition screening tool that they have for their student athletes and starting to, you know, enhance that area of nutrition. I guess it takes longer, obviously, because I'm not there. It's not a full-time position. So your expectations just have to be appropriate to the appropriate amount of time that these schools are paying you for, which makes sense, right?
Right.
You can't expect somebody to do a full-time job and get paid a fourth of that. I think that was the thing that I struggled with coming from like Notre Dame to St. Vincent and contracting, was I knew in my head everything that I could help student athletes with from the nutrition perspective. I was given, you know, one day a week or 2 days a month to do that. And I think I just got overwhelmed with feeling like, you know, a failure, so to speak, because I couldn't actually get to what I wanted to get to because it took a year just to build a relationship. I think, again, if you look at the amount of schools that have full-time sports dietitians and the amount of schools that need services that don't have access to any services whatsoever, there's so much opportunity out there. So getting comfortable in this, you know, uncomfortable contracting position is so needed.
It's taken me a while. Plus, I'm just an old guy, but it's taken me a while to get used to the consulting and the contracting world from that perspective as well. I never have a problem with working with the athletes.
Mm-hmm.
That's never.
Yeah, agreed.
But sometimes I'd like to have more time with the coaches, the ADs, the, you know, the sports doctors, the nutritionists, mm-hmm. you know, because I consult general and overall performance wise. So I come in and I look at a program and I see what they don't have and where they may benefit the most. And I may recommend, I may look at that program and say, you know what, AD or coach, I think what you need the most of is nutrition input.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Or strength and conditioning coach, you just need some help. You can't do it all.
I feel very fortunate over the last year when we moved from Indiana to Illinois. I just started contacting all of the schools in Illinois, all the Division I schools in Illinois that don't have a full-time sports dietitian, because I'm just starting with Division I. It takes time to work down to Division II and III. I contacted all of them and have had meetings and on-site, like on-campus meetings with several of them. And I'm really fortunate for that because I, you know, whether I get a contract with them or not, I feel like I've learned so much just about different universities and what they have, what they don't have. Just it's been a really good thing to learn and see.
In our world of strength conditioning and performance, Chris can even tell you that not all Division I schools have full-time strength coaches either for all their athletes. They may have a performance director, but he's doubling or she's doubling or tripling or quadrupling as a whole bunch of things.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I look for when I'm researching a school online, you know, if I'm looking at a school in Indiana that I don't know that well, or one in Missouri, I look to see how many strength coaches they have and if they even have strength coaches, because I know obviously strength coaches come before nutrition, just because nutrition's been a, you know, last, you know, 15 years position that's been added. That's definitely something I look for, is see how well, you know, if they only have one strength coach, I might go to the other schools who have two or three or a couple GAs before I start pitching my services.
There's definitely a need for a section of the professional group that can offer those kind of things in a package to smaller schools at a contracted rate that they could afford, you know, in the off season and with advice for the season, you know, at some point, but they can afford it without having a full-time guy. Everybody's budget's different.
Right. And I think that's the thing that I've had a hard time trying to figure out is, you know, my brain went to, like, in order to figure out the different, like, if I wanted three packages to offer a school, I went to know, okay, this is what it would cost you to hire a full-time sports dietitian, and you're not there yet. So that's too high. So I'm going to go below that and make that my ceiling, and then create three different levels below that. And then that's even interesting. You know, some schools still are shocked by the price when in all reality, I feel like they should be really happy and excited because it's something. In Charleston, Illinois, you may not have access to a sports dietitian. Like, I know you don't. I know this area.
That's where the education part comes in. I don't say this facetiously. I mean it. They don't know the value of your, your skill set. And although these are very intelligent people and a lot of them are very smart in their areas of expertise, what I got a lot of when I was trying to help coaches specifically was, well, we do it like this. Well, okay, I understand. You have a way you do things. But if there's some stuff that's not working, if you're 5-5 and you've been 5-5 for the last 7 years and you're at a D2 school and you're a pretty stable coach that's not worried about losing his job.
Right.
You know, I think you owe it to the students and the institution to try something different, at least a little bit of something different.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Continue pushing forward, enhancing your skills.
You know, I don't think you can just say that's the way we do it and let that be it, or blame it all on the athlete.
Mm-hmm.
We're not getting the same caliber athletes that we used to get. That's, I've heard that a couple times and I'm like, ah, I think you got some pretty good ones, but that's just me. There could be some help in other areas for pushing stuff out like that, and getting those educational pieces out to, you know, what a nutritionist, a psychology consultant, a data science person or sports science person, you know, what are all these people and why are they good for your institution and how do you get them there affordably?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who does that, Anna. It's probably not me, but, you know, I'm just talking. So let's talk strictly nutrition. And let's talk about, what's the first thing you do with an athlete in that initial meeting? From your perspective, now, I understand you're an independent contractor now.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than what you would do knowing that you're going to see that athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
I mean, let me say yes and no.
Okay.
So the thing that I think is better now is that I have automated nutrition assessments. So, you know, with the 482 students at SIU, we can push out a nutrition assessment to every single one of them and then get that back and review it. So that I feel like is easier and better. And again, since I left the full-time sector, like, technology has done nothing but blow up, right? There's so many different options that performance coaches or dietitians can use. You know, just because I use one specific thing doesn't mean it's the only option, but you know, the assessment is always the first thing that you do with an athlete, probably the same as if you're a strength coach. I'm sure you're assessing their weaknesses and their strengths and balances and things like that. So nutrition assessment is number one. And again, I feel excited about it because I know I can gather all of that data on the entire athletic department.
So once you get that, what's the next thing you do?
So then we go through and we look for red flags, right? So athletes who might fall on like the red S spectrum, right? So low energy availability, like female athletes who have not had a recent menstrual cycle, athletes who have had frequent injuries, frequent illnesses. Obviously, if their medical history comes back and they have a nutrient deficiency, like let's say they're a swimmer and they know they have low iron, or they're a cross-country runner and they know they have low iron, or if somebody, you know, has celiac disease or type 1 diabetes. I mean, so there's a lot of things we're looking for as far as, you know, whether they're taking in enough calories and that could lead to issues, or whether they have a nutrient deficiency like iron deficiency anemia, or, you know, a medical diagnosis. And then from there, we would, you know, schedule one-on-one sessions, dig a little bit deeper, really understand their history. You know, is this a new diagnosis? Is this something that they've lived with for the last 5 years and they feel very comfortable managing it? You know, are they a freshman and they're transitioning to dining hall? Do they feel comfortable knowing how to get gluten-free items at the dining hall? So yeah, just kind of really understanding their situation and how what often, they need help with.
How often do you get to talk to the individual athlete?
Very often. Yeah, my athletes can send me a chat, like a text basically through the chat function. Anytime, any day. And then they can also schedule one-on-one sessions. I mean, I can't say I have a one-on-one session with an athlete, like with, you know, one specific athlete every single day. That would be a bit much. But those would be the athletes that we are flagging first and pulling for those one-on-one sessions first versus, you know, just kind of anybody who wants to learn about nutrition, right? Those athletes need to take precedence because they have a medical connection to nutrition. And then from there, once we've gone through and helped those athletes and gotten them the help that they need, then we move on to, okay, who wants to meet with the sports dietitian for performance reasons?
Are you finding that more and more athletes are coming out of high school with, you know, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, something that they need to address nutrition-wise? I don't want to say than it used to be because I don't know what it was in the past. What do the numbers look like?
I would not say that we rarely see a type 2 diabetes in athletes. It's really type 1. Right. And type 1 is just such a low population that stays pretty consistent and doesn't change based on, you know, like lifestyle factors. I would say that things that universities are screening for and were able to identify at a higher rate would be things like iron deficiency anemia, low vitamin D. You know, that would be a difference between a high-level nutrition program at a Notre Dame or a big conference school, like a Big Ten school, versus the smaller schools that I may contract with. At the smaller schools, they don't have blood work. I don't have access to their blood work. Or I shouldn't say I don't have access to it. They haven't had that done. So they've been tested for the things that the NCAA mandates, like sickle cell, right?
Right.
But they haven't had like an iron test or a vitamin D test unless they go do that with their own doctor. That is one thing that, you know, as a dietitian kind of stinks, because when you're used to working with teams where you just get that data and you get to help manage them, and you know that this swimmer that is coming to you that is fatigued, you know her iron level is okay. Like, you can check that box and then figure out what else is going on. But when you have a swimmer come to you and you don't know if this person has iron deficiency anemia, and you don't have, you know, you would have to say, athlete, please go spend money and do this.
Yeah.
To know that part, that part stinks.
That stinks, and you get questions.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly from mom and dad.
Yeah, and I would be happy to tell mom or, you know, to show them what it is they would learn, because most of the time insurance is going to cover it anyway.
Most of the time.
But yes, that is one of the parts that I will say I miss the most.
Okay, so you've identified any identifiables. You did the assessment, you did the identifiable or made the identifications. You've singled out the one-on-one athletes. In your assessment, once you singled out the one-on-one athletes, take them through their thing. What's next? I'm walking you through this because we have a lot of athletes that listen to the podcast and they ask a lot about nutrition. And I'm going to ask you later on about some stuff. I think we asked this question in the panel last year, but about protein and other things. Let's go through that next step.
Yeah. So, you know, once we figure out if they have a diagnosis of anything, let's just give an example that this athlete is coming to me because Well, I guess I can just use a current athlete that I have. I have an athlete who is a swimmer, and this athlete does have diagnosable celiac disease and then also a nut allergy. And this athlete is going to be swimming at a school. I know it's D1, but let's just say it's, yeah, small D1. Small D1 school. And so this athlete wanted a couple things. One, she just wants to make sure that she's maximizing her fueling for her unique situation. But then two, she's a little bit, and I think her parents are also a little bit concerned about her transitioning to college because of her difficulties with, you know, having to get food for celiac, making sure it's gluten-free, and then right. also the nut allergy. So knowing both of those, this athlete has opted out of a dining hall plan, and I am huge pro dining hall. We can get into that next because I am very passionate about it. But this athlete has opted out because the school just didn't have, I guess, maybe enough options or the confidence in cross-contamination and so on. So this athlete wanted to be able to increase her cooking skills this summer so that she felt confident going into the fall, being able to make meals for herself on a daily basis.
Performance Talk with Yul Gordon and Chris Costa is brought to you in part by Ground Level 4. GL4 is an athlete-focused performance consulting service dedicated to the success of athletes at all levels. Ready to progress and improve performance with the input of professionals? Book your initial consultation. Visit groundlevel4.com. Now, join Yul and Chris with our guest for more on Performance Talk.
Okay. That's interesting, you know, for that reason. And that's a lot of responsibility to take on, but for the athlete, but I can understand the fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about, you said you're a huge dining hall fan.
Yeah. No, I am a huge proponent of the dining hall. When you're at a school, a big conference school, and they have full-time sports dietitians, oftentimes they also have something called a training table, right? The dining hall for the athletes that the dietitian, sports dietitian manages. So that's awesome. And obviously the highest level of having access to nutrition as an athlete, right? Because the things that that dining hall does that maybe other dining halls don't do is maybe they're open during hours that other dining halls aren't, right? Because athletes might be getting out late from a practice or need meals in between regular meal times. So that's a big one, is just timing. Right. Timing of getting through the line, right? There was a school I worked with, Ball State, one of their dining halls had this awesome stir fry station. They're like the best stir fry station. Every athlete loved it. But unfortunately, you had to wait 45 minutes in that stir fry station to get stir fry. That doesn't work, right? We don't have 45 minutes to stand in line to get this meal. Timing of getting through the line is really important. And then obviously being able to have a well-balanced meal and enough options, you know, enough lean protein options, enough cooked vegetable options that look appealing and appetizing, enough carbohydrate options. So those are the things. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, you don't want all the nutrients cooked out of the vegetables either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of time they're just
sitting there for a long time because they don't look appetizing. So then nobody takes them and then they sit there for even longer. So those are the things that a sports dietitian is managing within a training table. So then you take the training table away, right? I work or I contract with SIU. They don't have a training table. So I visited all the dining halls there and you know, I obviously make suggestions. It's dining halls. It's not a training table. So there's always improvements and suggestions you can make. But the thing that I learned this year that makes me so passionate in this area is through the nutrition app that I use, I have athletes taking pictures of their meals because we learn about the athlete plate and then we take pictures of our meals to see how it looks like the athlete plate. There's this swimmer that I work with and he is a freshman. So he just blew me out of the water because of his, I think, inherent sports nutrition knowledge. Like he hadn't previously worked with a sports dietitian, but he's taking pictures of all his meals throughout the entire year. And this kid has insanely high nutrition needs, like 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. right? Really, really high. And every single picture he took, he had a minimum of 4 plates in the picture. Now, you know, there would be like the main meal, there would be the vegetable. He liked carrots and ranch a lot. There'd be the yogurt parfait with the berries and the yogurt and the granola. There would be like hummus and pita bread. Like, I'm not kidding you, like a minimum of 4 plates at every single meal. And this athlete had such a good year. Like, even if the dining hall is not perfect, the thing that I see through that is that, number one, the food is cooked for you. You're tired as an athlete. It takes a lot of time to prepare a meal, right? It takes a lot of time to prepare the meal. It also takes a lot of time to go grocery shopping, to get the groceries, plan it out so you're staying on a budget, right? You have to plan it. You have to go get the groceries, and then you have to prepare it, and then you eat it, and you're exhausted. Like, they don't have time for that. And then you add
about the cleanup.
Right. And then you add things like travel and being gone. I'm so passionate because, number one, it's prepared for you. Number two, he had so many options. The nutrient diversity that I could see on his in every meal that he had was so much more diverse than if an athlete were to make a meal on their own, right? If they're going to make a meal on their own, think of what a college student makes. They make a bowl of mac and cheese. They make a pizza. They make chicken nuggets, right? So oftentimes it ends up being like one, maybe two items. Maybe it's mac and cheese and chicken nuggets. Likely it's not mac and cheese, chicken nuggets with carrots and ranch with a yogurt parfait with hummus and pita bread with berries on top.
You're saying that they need to grow their palate up a little bit.
Well, I just think it takes so much effort to make 5 different foods that their nutrient diversity is going to go down no matter what.
I think the nutrient diversity also comes along with
exposure.
Exposure, training age, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Understanding that he obviously understood on some level that he needed that diversity. Most kids eat the same thing all the time.
Yeah, he obviously grew up in a family that had multiple foods at meals, right? And that's obviously the way we teach. With the athlete plates, at minimum, you would have your protein, your carbohydrates, and your fruit or vegetable, whichever it is, or both. Yeah. So anyway, that's the thing that I just went on a huge series on the dining hall to SIU on our Instagram account last week because I was reviewing like how much a meal plan costs because I feel like I'm always having to defend the dining hall. And I think the issue is that athletes don't want, it's like a natural human habit to not want to do what you have to do, like whatever you're forced to do, right? Like if we force them to eat at Chipotle every single day, eventually they would get sick of it, right? I would hope so, eventually.
If you think about, you know, the previous 18, 19 years, whatever it was that they grew up, there was a specific places that they ate. It was either out or at home.
Mm-hmm.
At home is in their room or in the dormitory, wherever they are or whatever. So to have to get up and go down to the dining facility or across the street, or they're all in the buildings now. But you know, to have to do that, that's, I mean, I kind of get that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why they have eating club.
What is this?
What'd you say? Yeah.
Eating clubs that inspire kids, student athletes, or students really, to join a club that maybe has a group of individuals that have equal interests, whether it be the specific sport that they play, or whether it be a hobby that they have, or a major that they're in, or anything that an individual may like, or even a type of food that they may like that they're going to either cook or order or bring or experiment with to try to get people, and not necessarily experiment with food, but to become more social, especially the early entrances to college. So we're talking the first year, second year students that may be going to a totally new location with no friends. They may or may not be playing any sports. So they're really not getting those social interactions outside of class. And it can be a way to not only get them to make commitment to eat, which I think is a subconscious piece, it's more of a social piece.
Mm-hmm.
But it could lead to introducing you to new foods, to actually going to the mess halls, dining halls, to try different things, you know, meet different people, which may lead you to different cuisines, right? If they grow up in culture, different ethnicity, they might eat totally different foods that you discover are something that you're interested in and may be more healthy for you.
Yeah, I love that.
It's not something that's super difficult. You can just put students in charge of the group and basically let them run the groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives you community. And yeah, and don't feel so alone as you're going to the dining hall by yourself. You know, you've got a group of people to meet with. I think one of the things I was saying was I always feel like I'm defending the dining hall. I'm defending it for all the reasons that I've already said. You save time, you save energy, you get more nutrition. And then lastly, I figured out, like, what does it cost these student athletes to have a meal plan? How many meals do they get out of it in a semester? Since, again, they don't have access to a training table. And this particular school, it was like $6.50 a meal. And when you think of an athlete, like, they mean 3,000 to 5,000 calories a day. And we're talking $6.50 a meal. Like, that's a bargain.
Okay.
I'm about to get a meal all planned then.
I know. You can't eat that cheap at Chick-fil-A, I can tell you that.
Or really anywhere, let alone going to the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. Foods, I know.
Whole Foods and all that. I mean, I'm not even talking about the company Whole Foods, just eating Whole Foods in and of themselves that are naturally sourced, not even organic, right?
Right. Or no, expensive. just getting groceries at Walmart. I mean, yeah, groceries are insane right now. I feel it because I'm trying to feed a family of four, and I shouldn't even feel it because my children are not even 5 years old, so they don't eat that much. But yeah, when you think of an athlete who's eating so much, like, to get $6.50 a meal has got to be the cheapest way you can possibly do it.
And I don't know, every dining facility is different, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the only thing I've ever worried about with athletes is that they get enough.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, whether they get enough themselves or whether they have enough available.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a double-edged sword. Sometimes it can be because they're not being offered enough. Other times it can be, you know, hey, young lady, you're being offered the world over here and you're taking two peas and a piece of lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of figure that out. So where were we?
Yeah, just being very pro dining hall. For those schools that don't have training tables, right? I guess that's, if there's any student athlete out there that is in college or even a JUCO and they don't have a training table at their school, I just highly encourage you to get a meal plan, even if it's not the full meal plan. Like at this particular school, you could buy like a group of 20 meals. Just so that day that you're tired, that you don't want to drive to go get fast food somewhere or make a meal yourself or go get groceries, you've got it done for you.
Even the training table is oftenly underused or underused.
Mm-hmm. I know. I felt that at Notre Dame and I would get so frustrated because, I mean, there was no lack of quality there. Like there was nicer meals there than I've had at restaurants. And I guess that's what I was going back to is when you're forced to do something, right? Like when you have to show up at training table or when you buy a meal plan. So then you're, you know, kind of forced to use that meal plan. It's like normal human nature to, you know, like want to skip class and not eat that. But I want to go get Chipotle or I want to go get Chick-fil-A or I want to go get pizza. I don't know how to combat that other than being very passionate about it and teaching them the things that I think make the dining halls great.
Probably close to 20 years ago, even not actually being able to get to the dining hall before practice and having to order from like an athlete's zone, right? A special dining hall, essentially. And that's not what it was called, but like a special dining hall that was open late, but the options were not the same as what you could get at the dining hall.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really have much of a choice. And the selection that was available was mostly processed food, mostly that kind of stuff. But that's all that you had to eat if you weren't good at managing your time.
Right.
Okay, well, let me go in and let me actually take
get
out
a this, plate to go
in my fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get back from practice, I'll eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or having a morning practice and then missing breakfast and having to go to class and not having options.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And that was 20 years ago. So now a lot of these schools have fueling centers, fueling stations, and all their facilities. Even those go underutilized. It's sometimes the product that is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it might not be as nutritious as it could be. Really, it comes back to, right, you got to eat something. So you're better off eating something rather than nothing. Because if you eat nothing, well, you're not going to have anything good come of that. So you try to give them things that they actually like, even if you know it's not quite as nutritious as you would like it to be, you know they have to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you what I've experienced this year. The school that I work with has one of the best fueling stations I've ever seen at a school. Highly impressed with it. And I guess the reason I should say I'm highly impressed with it is because a lot of the previous schools I've worked at, like Kansas, Illinois, and Notre Dame, had, you know, those are big conference schools with full-time sports dietitians that had training tables. So the fueling station was really meant for pre, post, and snacks, right? When you get to a school that doesn't have a training table, but they have an awesome fueling station, then you start seeing athletes who are eating their breakfast and lunch at a fueling station, like you said, is better than nothing, right? Maybe they were skipping breakfast before, or maybe they were skipping lunch before, and now they're actually getting a meal. But when our goal is something more similar to the dining hall, right? More fresh fruits and vegetables available versus, you know, canned fruit or packaged bars. And things like that. You know, obviously there's some room to grow. So it really is just figuring out like the purpose behind it. Like, what is the purpose behind this fueling station? Are we trying to feed student athletes breakfast and lunch out of here? Or do we need to continue pushing student athletes to remember that they should be eating breakfast and lunch either at home or at a dining hall? And this really is pre-post nutrition and snacks.
I think that it could work, but I think you'd also run into a lot of food waste if you tried to have whole foods in these fueling stations. You know, if you had a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner, you'd also have to have people that would manage it. And we're not just talking about full-time sports dietitians and nutritionists. We're talking about people that come in and make sure that the food that has gone bad is removed and replaced with better. People that are tracking the amount of money that's being spent in that fueling center and looking at what is going and what is not going, what is being eaten and what is not being eaten. When are the most frequent times that food is being taken out of here so that you're not spending all this money that each of these teams is allotted, right? Essentially giving away their endowment for nothing because it's going underutilized. It's that whole huge educational piece that, you know, it's hard to get through to student athletes. They'd rather talk to us about nutrition than they would a nutritionist, right? Makes absolutely no sense.
But well, there's low pressure when they know you probably aren't going to enforce something on them.
Well, I mean, you might find that strength coaches are tougher on nutrition than maybe a dietitian or nutritionist is because you may understand the trials and tribulations that go on in eating properly and changing your diet better than we do. And we're just like, hey, you got to eat this. Like, you're eating like crap. You need to stop. And this is what you need to do. And we don't have any tolerance for it. Whereas you say, Chris, that approach probably isn't the best. It's probably only going to work with 10% of the athletes. Right? The other 90% are going to say, I'm not going to change anything. You can't push it on me, right? So there's psychological tactics and skills that you may have that we don't. I don't think it's that. I just think that FaceTime, really, you know, there's more time with us than there is with the nutritionist, which means there's rapport and a relationship built there. So they're more apt to ask us. They see us all the time. So if you got a burning question, when are you thinking about it? When you're around somebody that's trying to enforce your health. If you're not seeing your dietitian regularly and your athletic trainer's not talking about it, then there's probably a good chance that those individuals aren't going to be reaching out to those people and speaking to those people on a regular basis.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the, you know, full-time versus contract things that I had to figure out and continue to still figure out how do I maneuver around that, because I don't want the strength coaches and the athletic trainers to be the person answering those questions. So it really is building relationships with those coaches and athletic trainers to make sure that obviously you're going to get the question, but then let's turn it into the dietitian and I'll create a video that you can send out or obviously answer that question when I'm there again. Yeah, but you're right. The things that you learn by being there is a lot.
Yeah. Part of the important piece, I think, also is, I don't want to say coming to the realization, but, you know, accepting the hurdles that are met and maybe shifting a little bit of that attention to say, okay, I might want to spend more of my time educating the athletic trainers and the strength and conditioning coaches so that they are equipped to make these answers to these questions, but then also knowing that they have the ability and the obligation to reference. Hey, listen, I can answer this for you, but... or and there's a person that can do it better for you. And guess what? I got this information from he, she, they. And if you're really curious, I can set up a meeting with you guys. So you can sit down and have a conversation about this. Now you've taken a large part of the ownership off of the athlete, and you're now facilitating instead of, in a way, probably to them, dictating.
Mm-hmm.
They should do.
Yep.
It's like, oh, they're helping me out. Yeah, yeah, now I'll go see them. Are they going to set it up on their own? Probably not.
Right. Yeah.
Many won't. But those that are really proactive will seek it out. Others will need you to do it for them. But then that might be it. That might be the only time that you need to do that for them. And they might just opt to schedule check-ins on a regular basis after they've developed that rapport and that relationship. That's just the two-headed beast that I think we all have to deal with regularly, whether you have a full-time or a part-time dietitian, or you have a contract dietitian working in a facility, multiple strength coaches, singular strength coaches. You just have to try to figure out a way to use your network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your referral sources.
Facilitate these relationships to your best ability. Mm-hmm. With the hope that they make the commitment.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you're actually, you know, giving me things that I'm going to write down for next year. Because I know, like, I built a really good relationship with the main strength coach. But I also know that I gave access to the app to every strength coach, every athletic trainer, every coach. And I do think that next year, that may be one of the areas I need to focus on more. Because I can obviously see who accessed the app and who didn't. And most of them did not. You know, the more that they actually see what it is I'm teaching and understand what it is I can answer through the videos that I have on there and the resources I have on there, the more that they will be able to be a referral source for me, which is huge.
Usable information is what they're looking for. I would
digestible, wager, I'd like to say.
Okay.
No pun intended. No pun intended.
I would wager a great deal on the fact that probably because they don't have, or they're not aware how usable it is, they have their own perception of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to look at the thing, but did you see this? No, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Who's they? Who are you talking
about? Right.
I'm talking about coaches. Talking about coaches, the referral network or potential referrals from coaches, athletic trainers, they may need the nudge as well to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And breaking down their own biases on nutrition, like you just, I think you were alluding to there.
Yep, that's right.
I just had this conversation with someone. You know, if it's something that they feel uncomfortable with because of their own insecurities around nutrition, something they're not going to want to talk about or not going to want to promote heavily, maybe because maybe it's something they feel like they should be working on and they haven't in the past. There's a lot of interesting emotions and feelings around nutrition.
So let's talk about those emotions and feelings and biases and thoughts with supplementation, from protein to
creatine, caffeine.
There you go. Let me dangle out there a little bit before you take the noose off my neck right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I'll bring it back to just the general theme of what we've done today, which is like the big program full time versus the consulting and how I tackle that. And I will say that that's one of the areas I feel like I mean, I have a couple of videos on it in my app, but I definitely feel like I don't have as good of a, what's the word, like stance on it maybe, or education on it as I feel like I did previously.
You don't have a position.
I do have a position, but I guess I would say I need to promote it more.
Okay.
So I have a position and I have, you know, a video series in my app on making sure you look for third-party tested supplements, which is huge. And a lot of athletes that don't have sports dietitians telling them that don't know that.
Right.
And then just going over the, you know, ones that I would promote versus not promoting, making sure they know the NCAA guidelines.
They're pushed. Athletes today are peddled and pushed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, and especially with NIL.
Yeah, and some protein and some supplements and things are good with under correct guidance.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just buy it and take it home and just ingest it at whatever quantity you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's that understanding, or it's that feeling that they've taken something that they've been recommended all the way through high school, but now it's illegal in college.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can't take it. So that understanding, I've bumped into a lot of that. I've been taking this since I was a freshman in high school. Okay, when's the last time you were tested for it?
Right, and now you're drug tested as an NCAA athlete. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned, they may not have known the difference between third-party supplements and not third-party tested supplements. So like you said, they could have been taking a protein powder that they bought at Costco since their freshman year, and they just had no idea that it's not third-party tested because they didn't know what that means. And it's just a protein powder, so who cares? It's harmless. But if it's not third-party tested, you just don't know because you just don't know. There's no insurance there.
And, you know, there's a level of education that needs to be brought up to speed on that because, you know, some of the people that push these kind of things or recommend these kind of things, although most are well-meaning, they just don't have the background to make mm-hmm. recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I had one kid tell me, Coach, I need to gain weight. And I was told any kind of weight is good weight. And I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that means.
Right.
But what are you trying to tell me? He says, well, I was just told if I wanted to gain weight, I needed to eat more X and I needed to take these supplements and this protein powder and everything he talked about. I was looking at, I said, boy, the quality of the calories that you're getting and that stuff you're taking is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to mention brands and brand names and stuff. We don't do that here. But needless to say, there's good choices out there for intake and there's bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's like as we were talking about, the third-party tested supplements are the ones you want to lean towards. And how do you find out? Maybe that's a question we can ask and see if you can tell our audience, how do you find out if it's third-party tested?
So there's two really good resources for that. One is called NSF for Sport, and the other one is called Informed Choice. And those websites or apps will list the third-party tested supplements. So if you go onto one of their websites and you search Gatorade, right, it'll show the Gatorade protein, the Gatorade electrolytes. If you search, I'm trying to think of one sold at Costco, I think there's something pro like Premier Protein. I honestly don't even know if Premier Protein is. So that would be one that if I had an athlete who was taking Premier Protein, I would say we need to look this up and check it out because yes, I know it's a popular brand all over Instagram. Yes, I know it's sold at Costco, but I have no idea if it's third-party tested. And so for that reason, we need to check it out. And third-party testing, the reason that that is important is because so many of these companies are small companies. Like a company like Gatorade owns their own facilities. And so all of the powder processed within their facilities is theirs, right? It's on their facilities, on their processing lines. But right. So many of these supplement companies are so small that they have to use contract facilities, contracted packaging facilities or suppliers. And right. That's where cross-contamination can occur. So it's not that any specific brand is trying to, you know, alter their product so that you get in trouble. Obviously, they probably don't want to do that because it's bad for their brand. Yep. But it happens. It happens unintentionally through cross-contamination because these companies use the same co-packers. So that's the reason why we have to have third-party testing.
Let's give them those websites again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Informed Choice is one of the options. And then the second one is NSF for Sport.
Okay. This is the time during the show that I hate because we've come to the end. But this is what happens when the conversation just flows. It always gets away.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that, but we could talk another hour probably.
Yes.
But we're going to do that at another time if we can get you back on the show.
Yeah, of course. Sounds good.
With that said, ladies and gentlemen, that's a good place for us to end. Informed Choice or NSF for Sport. Look at those. Look up supplements to see if they are third-party tested. Anna, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. And I know you got little ones to take care of, so we're not going to keep you extra. Chris, you got any final words?
I don't.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
This has been Performance Talk with Yul Gordon and Chris Costa. Today's guest was Anna Turner.
And we're out in 3, 2, 1.
That's it for another episode of Performance Talk. Come back next time as Yul and Chris welcome their next guest to the show to discuss what's going on in performance. For sponsorship information, or if you would like to be part of the show, leave your inquiry at theperformancetalk@gmail.com. That's theperformancetalk@gmail.com. Be sure to check in for future episodes of Performance Talk.